I'm fortunate to have had a marvelous father. Now, he's been deceased for over 20 years, but every once in a while, I can hear his voice coming in the back of my mind with a little bit of advice here or there. And one thing that, and every once in a while, this little bit of advice comes up in my father's voice, and I remember him saying this in reference to a neighbor who was rather abrasive, rather difficult. And my dad commented to the family, he said, he missed a perfectly good opportunity to keep his mouth shut. And I hadn't thought of it that way before. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes 3, verses 6 and 7. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 6 and 7. And this is a listing of the times for various things, a time to do things. In Ecclesiastes 3, starting in verse 6, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. Well, this is interesting because that followed my, that triggered the thought of what my dad said. And so the title of this message is, the high-risk title is, When to Keep Our Mouths Shut. My wife will probably have some suggestions for me later on this one. The prophecy in Isaiah 53, verse 7, was a prophecy about Jesus being falsely accused and tortured. And Jesus had a choice as to how to respond, but he remained silent. In Isaiah 53, in verse 7, he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, but as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. Now, this doesn't mean that we should be silent at all times, no matter what. It means that we have a choice, an opportunity to make good decisions about when to speak and when to remain silent. So today's message is, it was really from an idea I had from a magazine, an online magazine from geediting.com. And it's a resource for psychology writers. And so I want to cover today 8 points on when we should remain silent. Doesn't mean we remain silent all the time, but there are times, trigger points, when we should consider it. And number one, first point, when we should consider remaining silent is when we're in the heat of anger. Let's turn to Psalm 4 and verse 4. When we're in the heat of anger. In Psalm 4:4, be angry and sin not. Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. There's a time you can be upset, but that doesn't mean you have to rip somebody's heart out. And it's no secret that emotions can lead to hasty words and regretful actions. Every one of us have been there and caught in the grip of anger, ready to let loose a barrage of words that we may regret later. In Ephesians 4:26, they quote what we just read in Psalm 4:4 and Ephesians 4:26, but then they add a new item. In Ephesians 4:26, be angry and do not sin. Then they add this part. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Well, that new part means we must resolve things daily. And of course, we can reference Matthew 18 for brethren in the church to resolve things quickly and not let them brood or grow. So the psychologist suggests hit the pause button, hit the mute button, as it were. Take a moment and breathe. And they suggest a good idea is silence. Now, I grew up on the farm in Minnesota. In the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of cooperation done by the neighbors. We didn't all have modern equipment. So one neighbor would have one piece of vital machinery, another one would have another vital, and then other neighbors would all cooperate and share in harvesting. Like if it was making silage or and filling silo where you needed a lot of people to help out. And there was a fellow, a neighbor, you would call him a custom farmer, but he was the head of all of that, a rather interesting fellow. And wherever they went that day for that harvesting, cooperative harvesting, that family or that household would feed everybody lunch, you know, and then the next day they'd go on to the next place or however long it took and so forth. So there was a lot of inner relationships or a lot of everybody was all working together. And one day two guys got into a spat. And I remember the big farmer, Mr. Miller, said, one guy, he didn't argue. He just packed up and went home because he didn't want to make it worse. And this is where, and I heard this back, and it was in the 60s, when he said, and it was his wisdom, he said, sometimes it's just better to go home. Don't make it worse. Let's go to Proverbs 25 and verse 28. In Proverbs 25, verse 28. But this is about self-control, which is, of course, I'm not going through the fruits of the Spirit, but this would certainly fit in. In Proverbs 25, verse 28, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. What's a city like that's broken down without walls? It's defenseless. It's open. Anybody can come and take whatever they want if it didn't have walls. I mean, we just kept the feast near a medieval city. The walls are about 30 feet thick and about 30 feet high. Some walls were higher than that. There were tunnels through the walls. There were shops and places in the walls. But it was heavy old stonework to defend the city. Remarkable sight. But if a city is broken down without walls, it becomes defenseless. So we must have the strength to maintain self-control. So point one is remaining silent when we're in the heat of anger. Point two is, when we should remain silent? When we need to listen. Point two is when we need to listen. Now, what we often do is offer opinions and suggestions and solutions. Well, just ask me. I've got a solution for everything, right? A lot of guys are like that. Just throw in my direction and anything at all. Think of something. That's my job. Or my wife says, what are we going to do about thus and such? And I'll have an idea. So you go, oh. Well, that's what you pay me the big bucks for, right? That's my job, is to provide solutions. But sometimes we need to listen without volunteering an opinion or a solution. The magazine says, active listening is when we focus on the speaker, give them space and respect to express themselves without interruptions. It's not about devising a response, but understanding the speaker's perspective. In scenario like these, when you're actively listening, the silence is golden. It can make the speaker feel heard and validated, like they're worth something. It fosters trust and building stronger connections. In Job 29, verses 21 and 22, Job is giving a defense about his circumstances in life, and he's saying, you know, people rely on me. They look to me for wisdom and counsel. In Job 29, verses 21 and 22. Men listened to me and waited and kept silence for my counsel. Verse 22. After my words, they did not speak again, and my speech settled on them as dew. Ever watch how dew settles in the morning? Just kind of the moisture collects in the air and fills the ground. We've got some carports. You put a car under the carport, doesn't collect the dew. It doesn't fall and settle on it. So the people that were listening to Job, they were silent. They were listening to him, and they were absorbing the advice, the counsel from him, because they were willing to remain silent and listen to the wisdom that he was giving. So point two is, when we should we remain silent is when we need to listen. The third point is, we should keep our mouths shut when we're tempted to divulge secrets. Now, the secret could be a private confidence, or it could be the best chocolate chip recipe in the world that somebody makes that you're not supposed to reveal. Well, sometimes staying silent is crucial to maintaining not just mystery and intrigue, but trust. Research has found that revealing secrets leads to stress and guilt, especially if you're sharing something not meant for you to disclose. Because then, oh no, I shouldn't have said X, Y, Z, whatever it was. Remember that trust is built over time, brick by brick. But it only takes a moment of loose talk to bring it all crashing down. So when secrets are on the line, then they suggest silence becomes your best friend. In Psalm 141, verse 3, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth, keep watch over the door of my lips. That's the verse I was thinking of when my dad said he missed a perfect opportunity to keep his mouth shut. A door to my lips. Our door. Are we going to open the door and say what we shouldn't? That's just a problem. In Matthew 24, verses 9 and 10, it's an end time prophecy. In Matthew 24, verses 9 and 10. And they're talking, appears to be about us. And then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended and betray one another and will hate one another. That's a very uncomfortable prophecy, where people will not just hate, but actually betray one another, making life even harder for someone else. And of course, immediately we think of Exodus 20, verse 16, about not bearing false witness against our neighbor. If we're supposed to maintain a secret or a confidence, then we should do that. If that's the expectation, we should live up to that expectation. So number three, we should remain silent when we're tempted to divulge secrets. I'm not sure who it was that told me, who said, I can withstand anything except temptation. And so that is really the bottom line, is how well can we resist the temptation to divulge a secret, or can we keep that confidence to ourselves? So number four, we should remain silent when we're observing and learning. In my notes, I put, to observe and learn, we have to open our eyes and our ears. An interesting thing that I heard this, and this was decades ago in science class, in a biology class, about when we open our jaws, it reduces our ability to hear. The jaws drop, the ears start to close, and so the recommendation, if we're observing and learning, then silence can be an effective tool to help us to learn. And if you're always talking instead of listening, then you're missing out on what the opportunity to observe and then learn from others. But if we remain silent, it isn't just idle time. It's an opportunity to absorb information, gain insights, and learn from the experiences of others. And this has been backed up by studies that suggest that students who take a moment to reflect on what they've learned have a deeper understanding of the subject matter. So if we're in the midst of learning a new skill or a new environment, we might want to press our own personal mute button and remain silent. And the best way sometimes to learn is not to speak, but just to listen and observe instead. In Proverbs 8, in verses 33 through 35, hear instruction and be wise. Do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. Whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Eternal. So this idea of listening, heeding instructions, means listening instead of talking in order to hear and to understand. So point four is remaining silent while we're observing and learning. Point five, remain silent when someone is grieving. The article suggests that when somebody is enveloped by grief, the world shrinks to a small bubble around them. That's all they can see and feel. And words can seem inadequate, and they can really add to the weight of the problem instead of to lighten it. That in these delicate moments, silence can be more comforting than any uttered condolences. The presence alone speaks volume, and it's an unspoken testament to your support and care. Was at the feast this year in Estonia, and a woman from the United States came up and said, "Thank you," and this was over 10 years ago, she said, "Thank you for coming to my mother's funeral. I really appreciate it." Never said a word. We just were there. Just being there was of comfort, and never thought another thing of it. But that person didn't forget it. That was important as part of helping someone through the grieving process. So sometimes silence is the most compassionate response that we can give. If we look at Job chapter 2, starting in verse 13, in Job 2:13, we hear what Job's friends did when he was grieving. Job 2:13, "So when they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great." Just being there. I've had that in a period of great grief in my life, where somebody just came and stood next to me. Didn't say anything. There was no great pontification that they uttered anything that would be memorable. They just came and sort of sent the silent message, "It's going to be okay." Okay, just validated, just being there for somebody. So for believers, silence as a response to grief can be then an important practice. It allows a space for reflection, prayer, and the presence of God. In a world that's filled with noise and quick fixes, embracing the silence can be a way to honor the depth of a person's grief. So point five is to remain silent when someone is grieving. That doesn't mean we have to say nothing. I'm just saying it's deciding when and what to say, and generally less is more. Point six, it's a good time to keep our mouth shut when we're dealing with criticism. Ouch. One of the contributors to this article wrote, "I remember a time when my work was criticized heavily during a meeting. Hot embarrassment flooded me, and my immediate reaction was to jump to my defense and explain my decisions." Doesn't that sound normal? We all want to defend ourselves. "Wait a minute, that's not exactly the way it is, and blah, 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 or you're misunderstanding the whole thing." The writer goes on, "But instead I chose to remain silent and just listen." Well, silence in the face of criticism is powerful. Difficult, but also powerful. It gives you time to digest the feedback before reacting. It's easy to respond defensively, but holding off can give you space to reflect and take on any valid points. It's also a sign of maturity. If you're able to soak in the criticism without instant reaction, then you may be able to prevent an argument as you are looking to see if there's validity. And it may be hard to resist, but staying silent during criticism may often be the best course of action. In Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 1, Habakkuk 2, chapter 2 and verse 1, we have an example of someone who understood the possibility of being corrected. Habakkuk 2, verse 1, "I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected." Sometimes we know that correction is in order. And I hate to say this, but I rather welcome correction. Because otherwise, how can you know? How would you know if you do not invite correction? I know at the feast, what we do is we have surveys that we send out. One survey is, how's your housing? Everything there is to know about it, several pages of detailed survey. And then we also have a general feast questionnaire about everything else. Because if you don't ask the questions and you don't welcome the criticism, how will you really know? Or will you just be irritating people by what you don't know? And so when dealing with criticism, you give the documentation or you invite that criticism and then take an honest effort to review it. Sometimes when we get criticized, rather than immediately defensively respond, the best answer might simply be to say thank you. And that'll buy you time to reflect on that criticism. Many of you know I was a teacher for many years before retirement. And there was a student in the hallway at the school. And the teacher called out a particular student for saying something. And he said, that was really dumb. And the student looked back at the teacher and said, no dumber than you look. It probably wasn't the best remark to do at the time, to have a retort. So the whole idea is maybe giving thought to a criticism or a suggestion. Sometimes silence would be the best answer. I'm not sure if the kid got suspended on that, but it was not a happy thought. Of course, the teacher probably shouldn't have said that in that way either, but humans do what they do. Point six was keeping silent when dealing with criticism. Point seven is keeping our mouth shut when words can hurt. Well, we know that words have a sharp edge that can cut deeper than any knife, especially when spoken in anger or frustration. Well, in these times or circumstances, silence can be a lifeline that prevents the conversation from escalating into a damaging argument. And if you remain silent when provoked, it can break a cycle of aggression. So that moment of silence provides a breather, a moment to de-escalate, a chance to choose a more constructive response instead of telling the teacher, no dumber than you look. that will live in infamy. So if you're dealing with something that's on the tip of your, on the tip of your tongue, and they say something and you're ready to bite back, then the silence could be a shield that will safeguard relationships from toxic responses. In Proverbs 15:1, we read, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. A soft answer, sometimes really soft, almost hard to hear. but a harsh word, I didn't put the verse down, but it's like wringing the nose brings forth blood, so does a harsh word bring forth anger. I don't like the idea of somebody wringing my nose. I imagine other persons wouldn't like it either. And then one of my favorite verses is in Proverbs 17:28. In Proverbs 17:28, we read, even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he's considered perceptive. I think that's where the saying is, it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. so I'm guessing it came from a variation of this verse. But when words can hurt, that's a good time to remain silent. Then the eighth point, last point, a good time to keep our mouth shut is when we're just not ready to speak. Sometimes people feel compelled to fill up time and space with words, fill in the gap. But silence isn't just the absence of sound. It can be a statement on its own and can speak volumes when words would otherwise fail. There'll be times if a conversation grows too heavy or personal or simply too demanding. And it's okay if you don't have all the answers right away or the right words in place, and you may not be ready to speak. You may want it some time to formulate. And so silence can become your sanctuary, a special place for you to align your thoughts, process and determine how to best respond. Sometimes you're overwhelmed and you don't feel like you're ready to speak, so you can wrap yourself in a blanket of silence. So there's strength in showing vulnerability and taking time to respond. You don't have to rush it. You don't have to do like that kid did in the hallway. Some people fill up the time and space, and others take the time to consider the words. It isn't always what we say, but sometimes it's what we didn't say and how we didn't say it. In other words, restraining ourselves from time to time. Let's go back. We started in Ecclesiastes 3 about a various time, and let's look at back to Ecclesiastes 3 in verse 7. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. So if we look at this eighth point, it may be a time to keep silent when you're just not ready to speak. Well, to summarize this article, it's throughout the ages, silence has often been the counterpart to vocal expression. And some people say, well, you remain silent, and therefore silence is really assent or your agreement. And in some cases, that may be true. This is why we have to develop discernment, when to say something and when not to. But let's use it as a tool. It's not just the absence of sound. It can be a tool in decision-making, critical thinking, and understanding. It can be used, silence can be used to mend or heal, and can provide a sanctuary amid chaos. I'd like to close with Proverbs 10 and verse 19. Proverbs 10 and verse 19. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise.